Hello and welcome back. If this is your first time joining, I'm so happy you're here. If you have been here before, I'm grateful to have you joining me again to have another chat about what's diet culture, what's not diet culture, diving into all things nutrition, wellness, fitness from a non-diet perspective, because there is so much out there that is just so diet culture oriented. And as a dietitian, I am so passionate about sharing different perspectives, especially those that are based in educated opinions and based in research, so that you can more easily decide how you want to interact with the things that I've mentioned around nutrition, wellness, fitness, ED recovery, all of the different things, even just current events, because there is a lot that goes on, especially right now as we're nearing summertime. If you're listening to this when it comes out, it always irks me to see that increase in the summer shred type of language, if you will. Well, I dove right into the intro and I realized I haven't even introduced myself. My name is Mallory Page. As I said, I am a dietitian. I am the creator of the content of which I've mentioned, including this podcast that you could be listening to, Seems Like Diet Culture, or if you are on YouTube, I'm waving at you. If you didn't know, you can watch all of these podcast episodes also on YouTube. They will be linked in the description. And similarly, if you're watching this YouTube video and you'd rather watch it on a podcast, that will also be linked within the description. So today we are going to be talking about if there are any foods that you absolutely should not be eating. And I actually came up with this topic when I saw a comment from one of you guys asking me this question. And I feel like it's such an important thing to go into. And I feel like a lot of us think that the answer to this is very simplistic. And yet it's actually way more complex than you may think. And so today I'm going to be answering this in different layers so that you can really understand for you what the answer to this question is. And then also objectively what the answer to this question is. And I'll put in my personal viewpoint as well, but I'll make sure to name that so that you understand when I'm going to be bringing that up. But before we dive into this, I do want to mention one thing that I'm so excited to be talking to you about. I have the most exciting project that just released called the Food Freedom Challenge. Now, you may be wondering what this is. It's 14 days to becoming BFFs with food again, and it is completely free. What it has is daily prompts. It has live videos that are also all recorded. So don't stress if you're like, oh, I'm not going to have time to fit in live videos. That's totally okay. It has a private community support from me and my other coaches, and it's ultimately just going to be so much fun. But it is only open from right now when you're listening until the 15th of April, or 11:59 p.m. on April 14th, because we're going to be starting the 14-day challenge then. So I wanted to let you guys know about it. The details will all be linked in the description. You will want to sign up as soon as you can, because there are some things that would be needed to be done in order to get ready to start the challenge. So again, I'll leave that information, but I just had to tell you guys because I did not want you to miss out on this free opportunity. We don't know when we're doing this again. We're just doing it for the first time because I thought it'd be really fun and I wanted to give something to you guys, especially going into this summertime. So I just had to say that. But now let's actually dive into this topic and answer the question that we're posing about whether or not there are foods that you should or should not eat. Now, I think that we need to lay the groundwork for this and first address the fact that this kind of hinges on the idea that there are healthy and unhealthy foods, or nutritious and not nutritious foods, or clean and unclean foods, however you want to name it. And I feel like for you guys to understand how I would personally answer this question, we first need to talk a little bit about something called food neutrality. So food neutrality is this concept that we can have a neutral reaction and viewpoint to any food. And I know the first thought that probably comes to mind for you with this is, okay, but how can I be neutral to all foods? Aren't foods different? And the answer to that is yes. Food neutrality is in no way trying to say that an Oreo and spinach and chicken are the same thing, because that would be nonsensical. They're not the same thing. They all have different compounds. They have different makeups. They have lots of different things that make these foods different. But what it is saying is that the way that we react to these things can be different, because we can acknowledge that food is so much more than just nourishment and fuel, and that there are tons of different ways in which food can nourish and fuel us. So some of the different ways that I bring up in the way that food and beverages or any type of thing that we intake can nourish us is, of course, nourishment and fuel, as I mentioned, but also joy, also connection, also culture, also experiences, and so much more. Now, you may be thinking, I don't understand what that means. What do you mean by food can be fueling me with joy? So I wanted to give you some examples, but I first wanted to start off with the specific examples of how this looks for nourishment and fuel, because these are the things we hear about more often, right? So an example of how food can nourish you is you could be adding some extra veggies or fruits to your plate because you know that they bring specific nutrients that are beneficial to your body, right? Fuel could be adding carbohydrates to a meal because you know that they help with energy, and or having protein because you know it helps with your satiety. Or it could be an athlete using carbohydrates during a race to make sure that they have the right energy reserves, right? So there's a lot of different ways that this can look. Those are just examples, but I imagine those are the things that you hear about a lot, right? We're very familiar with these examples of how food can fuel us, how food can nourish us, but we're often not as familiar with the other examples that I mentioned, the joy, the experience, all of that type of stuff. So I want to give you examples of what this can look like. So for example, food can fuel you with joy because when you have a food that you love, it can bring up that emotion. This is 100% me getting my vanilla latte and a croissant. I mean, the amount of joy I experience in that moment, it's beyond what I can even put into words, okay? I freaking love it. I can't express how joyful it makes me. And there's so many other examples like that. A food could be a cultural experience, you know, connecting you back to your culture and your food, sharing that with your loved ones that are connected with that as well. And this is especially challenging in our society because things have become very, you know, Americanized, where people almost feel as if their cultural foods maybe aren't healthy, quote unquote, or they shouldn't be eating them. If you know, you know, you saw the debacle about someone saying that salsa wasn't a vegetable. It's a whole thing. I'll try to remember to link some videos on this that talk about this specific topic, but that's an example of how food can be something that's a cultural connector. Another example of this is just in general that food can be connection, right? Sharing a baked good that someone made you together, or going out to a meal and having an experience on your own or with someone, right? All of these are different ways that food can fuel or nourish us outside of just being nourishment and fuel. Because here's the truth. It's never been the case that food was only nourishment or only fuel. That's what our society and diet culture and all of these people that you see online want you to believe, because it feeds into the narrative that fits our societal expectations, especially here in America, right? Hustle, only do what's necessary, grind it out. You don't need to have joy. You just need to grind towards your goals. And it's also very, you know, capitalistic type of mindset, right? All about just the necessities and income generation and like surviving. But that's not how food is meant to exist. Our relationship with food is meant to be very multifaceted. And in order to have it be as healthy as possible, there should be multiple different ways where food or how there should be multiple different ways that food does contribute to your overall livelihood. So When we lay all of these things out, you may then be wondering to yourself, okay, well, how do I know how often to have a food that is fueling me versus nourishing me versus for experiences, and how do I balance all of those things? The truth is that at different times in your life, in different weeks, different days, you're going to lean more into different areas of how food can support you. So as an example, let's say you're recovering from being sick. You're probably going to lean a lot more into nourishment from food in that case because you want to get better. You don't want to feel sick anymore. So you're going to be focusing more on that thing. Now, let's say you're on vacation. You're probably going to be focusing a lot more on experiences with food. You're going to be focusing on having fun, maybe joy from those things. You're hopefully not fixating too much on, oh, this has to be the perfect type of fuel or nourishment. And so you can see how these things will just kind of fluctuate throughout your life. And even as you look at periods of time in your life, you may have times where you lean more into certain things, right? You know, I can think back to times where I've been super stressed out and I feel like all I was really viewing food as is fuel. Just like I just need to make sure that I eat, even if I don't feel like I'm hungry, whatever it is. And then there's other times where maybe you feel like you've been having a lot of fun with food. And so you've been having these really cool experiences and trying new things. I could go on and on, but I think you guys get the gist of just how there are all these different ways that food can support us. In my personal viewpoint and in the non-diet viewpoint that I really support. But now that we've laid that out, you're probably still wondering, okay, but what's the answer to the question? Like, are there foods that we should or shouldn't eat? Now, here's the thing. The first thing to remember is there are some foods in certain cases that no one should eat. If you are allergic to a food, such as, you know, you have an anaphylactic allergy to it, or you have something like celiac disease, or you have an actual allergy where you have a reaction to that food, you should not eat that. Let's say you hate a food. You shouldn't eat food that you hate, in my opinion. I mean, that's not something I would do. Again, you could if you wanted to, but that's something I would say you absolutely don't need to. Obviously, a food that is unsafe to eat, it's dirty, it's spoiled, all of those obvious things are times where you shouldn't eat a food. I think you guys all know that, but I feel like I just have to cover my bases because I'm not even kidding you. If I didn't say this, I would get a comment from someone being like, okay, well, I'm allergic to foods. And I'm like, well, obviously, don't eat foods you're allergic to. That's just the internet. Anyways, but outside of these more obvious things, what's the answer to this question? I'm going to give you an answer that you don't like first, and then I'm going to explain it. You have to figure out for yourself, based off your intuition and what's right for you, whether or not there are certain foods that you shouldn't eat. To demonstrate this, I'm going to tell you a little story about me and my journey. So there were many years in my life where I was severely limited in terms of what I would eat. There were very few foods that I deemed as quote unquote good enough. And there were so many foods, numerous foods and ingredients too, that I did not think were good enough for whatever reason it may be. I even went so far as to convince myself that I had not just intolerances, but allergies to foods. I would even actually create, which I didn't know this at the time, right? I'm looking back retrospectively. I would create anaphylactic type of reactions to ingredients that I was so afraid of. And I honestly, at that time, couldn't imagine putting these quote unquote bad for me, quote unquote unhealthy, I would even venture to say wild things like poisonous or toxic foods into my body. And I couldn't understand why other people would do that either. And I know that's a very judgmental point of view, okay? I'm just telling the complete truth to you guys, to be honest. So let's fast forward to now. In my life now, there is not one food that I would not eat. Not one ingredient, not one food. As you can imagine, I was not actually intolerant or allergic to anything, even though, yes, I did have those things come up on a freaking BS food allergy test. Food intolerance tests, like all those things, guys, are total BS. I have some of, I'll link a podcast, one of my very first podcasts where I talk about this on gut health so that you guys can check that out if you're interested in hearing more. Now, even though there's no foods that I won't eat, there are foods that I eat more often than others. Mainly for me, it comes down to cost, availability, ease of making that food, and enjoyment of that food. So for example, I really enjoy having eggs and avocado often because in my eggs, avocado toast, because I like it. It's inexpensive and it's easy to make. Now, that's not to say that if someone else was whipping up my breakfast, making me something different, I wouldn't eat it. But it's just something I eat often because of the convenience. Now, I also eat chocolate candy often, especially if you know, you know, the Trader Joe's dark chocolate peanut butter cups are currently my obsession. So freaking good. But Brian's also been making a lot of like chocolate chip cookies. The other day he made macadamia nut cookies. What are the white chocolate macadamia nut cookies? They were very delicious. So we have a plethora of different desserts in our house, but I eat those because I enjoy them. Now, I don't eat a lot of Skittles or candy because I'm not a huge like that type of candy fan. I'm a chocolate girl through and through. Like my core, there's not a chocolate candy I've met that I am not obsessed with. Okay, you know, Brian's the opposite as me though. He loves like candy, Skittles, like Jolly Ranchers. I'll eat them. It's not my thing, right? So that's not saying that I won't eat those foods or I think they're bad. It's just that I allow myself to be intuitive to what my preferences are. Now, simultaneously, there are certain times where I may not eat foods as often. I'll give this example of when I was going through some issues with gastritis. So gastritis is like an inflammation of your stomach lining. It can be a precursor to something like a stomach ulcer if it can continuously deal with it. And when I was dealing with that, I avoided a lot of acidic foods. Like I love coffee. I wasn't drinking coffee. I really liked tomatoes, tomato sauce, spaghetti. I wasn't eating as many of those because they were acidic, not because I thought they were bad, but because I needed to take a little bit of space for where my body was currently at. And that's the thing about developing intuition around your choices and what should and shouldn't be, quote unquote, within your diet and your lifestyle. It will probably fluctuate throughout time depending on what you're going through. But what's tricky about it is, as you can see, there are times where we believe we're being intuitive when we're actually being kind of restricted or short-sighted around our choices. So in that first example I told you guys from years ago, I genuinely thought that I was being intuitive by listening to my body, quote unquote, with these intolerances. But the thing was, I was creating these intolerances through such heightened stress, through obsession, through imagining reactions. It wasn't really my body that was actually creating those. It was my mind. And it was also my very ingrained desire for control, as well as deep-seated diet culture beliefs or beliefs other people had instilled in me over time. And so you may then be wondering, well, how the heck do I determine whether or not I'm listening to my intuition with my preferences around food? You know, am I actually avoiding a food or eating a food more because it feels best for me? Or am I doing it out of some other underlying wound or fear or, you know, misguided mindset? That comes down to really getting in tune with yourself and where you're at in your relationship with your body and food. So what I would say will help you to determine whether or not the way that you're interacting with food is actually beneficial to you is by, number one, befriending your body and building and healing your relationship with food back to a healthy place. And then from that point, continually utilizing self-inquisition to determine what works for you moment to moment as your life changes, as you age, as things come up. Now, if you're feeling like, how the heck do I do that? I'm going to give you some little starting points, but also I will say that the free 14-day challenge that I mentioned on becoming BFFs to food, you know, this is literally laying the groundwork to do exactly this. It will be so transformative. So if this is resonating with you, again, check that out in the description. It's totally free, as I mentioned, but only open for this week. So How would you do this? If we're just, you're like, I'm not doing the challenge. How would you do this? Well, you need to build awareness, right? We need to start asking questions around why you're making the choices you're making now, why you have the beliefs you have now, what your version and idea of health is, all of those things, building an awareness around where you're at. Then we need to work on tuning out the diet culture noise from there. So if you detect areas of which you may notice diet culture, notice limiting beliefs coming up within your thoughts, that's a good thing to pinpoint. And then you want to implement some structure and some habits to actually help you to combat the things that are not supporting you and build towards the relationship with food that you want. So for example, you may recognize that you have some kind of wellness-obsessed tendencies. So you think you need to avoid sugar, but actually, you know, maybe that's influenced by the fact that you are very afraid of the fact that you think sugar is unhealthy through the fact that you've heard all these things about sugar addiction. So we need to first be aware of the fact that you have the fear of sugar. Second, understand what created it, both personally from other people talking to you and externally from the things you see in diet culture, then work on unlearning those things. So listening to podcasts like the one I have on why sugar isn't addictive, and then implementing things to help you to restructure your relationship with that through building goals and habits. So around breaking down the fear of sugar. So that's just one example. There's 6 trillion examples that I could say with this. But again, circling back to our question, for me, my answer to are there foods that I absolutely shouldn't eat? My answer would be no. I truly believe that I want to be able to eat every single food because I feel it's very beneficial to me. I want to be able to go to a friend's wedding and eat anything that they're serving. I want to be able to, you know, go out to eat at any time and not have food restrictions. Now, I know I'm very blessed because I don't have allergies or celiac disease or anything of that sort. So I recognize I'm very lucky in that case to even be able to make that choice. And I believe that when I've felt my absolute best is when I have just been able to tune into myself and my body and listen to what that communicates to me. And I know that that can feel far off, but hopefully you feel like as I've gone through some of this episode, it's been a little bit demystified of how you would reach this. Now, I think that where people get a little tripped up is they can kind of answer this question for themselves and decide there are certain foods that I don't think I should eat. I'm going to use seed oils and Red 40 because I see them a lot. And I want to use this in an example with a parent talking to a child. And I also want to use this in a personal example. So there are some people that really firmly believe they don't want their kids to have Red 40, for example. Now, I'm not here to say that's the right or wrong choice. If you want an episode on something like this, let me know and I can put something together. But what I will say is I think that the question to ask yourself then in this case is how far do you want to take that? So maybe you choose within your home to not have foods or make things that incorporate that. If you have the luxury and the privilege to do that, because I think it's very important to note that being able to make these choices around food and therefore buy foods without this is a true luxury when it shows you have a lot of income and ability to be able to do that, which there's no reason to feel bad about that. I just want to point that out, that not everybody even gets this choice, and it's a very lucky choice to get to make. But how far do you want to take that, for example, with your kids? Do you want them to have to go to a birthday party or be at school and say no, that they can't have certain foods? And then are you comfortable with the impact that that can have on their relationships, especially with the research that we have to show that parents that restrict their kids heavily, especially in social environments, can not only damage, you know, their some of the connection they're able to experience, but they can also especially have an increased risk for disordered eating and eating disorders. Again, it's not me saying what you should or shouldn't do, but it is important to keep these things in mind. Now, similarly, let's say this is a personal thing. You don't have kids, but you feel very afraid to eat seed oils. So maybe in your home, you choose not to cook with seed oils. But at the same time, if you go out to eat and there is something that's cooked in seed oils. Do you want it to be that you can't even go out to eat with people, experience the food that others have something that someone makes you just for the seed oils? Again, keeping in mind that increased stress that you're experiencing, that restriction that you are creating within yourself, that also has effects on your body and on your mental, physical, emotional state. Because we often undermine how much our holistic experience, especially with stress, affects our health. We know that, number one, having connections to others and experiences and having joy is very important for living your healthiest life. Number two, we know that being in high amounts of stress often is very negative for one's health. So again, you have to ask yourself, what am I trying to achieve with something like avoiding this in every single circumstance? And is that more beneficial to me to restrict this food than it is to just be able to have it, even if I choose not to have it in other circumstances? So the answer to this question is going to be different for every single person. And that's really what it comes down to. There's no right or wrong, but you do want to ask yourself, circling all the way back to the beginning, why are you asking yourself this question? Do you want to be healthy? Do you want to be in a smaller body? Are you in this pursuit of something specific? And does avoiding things or obsessing about this actually support your end goal, right? If you want to be healthy, but like I was just saying, your obsession with avoiding certain foods is negatively affecting you to the point where you're in increased stress, you're not able to connect with other people, et cetera, is that really benefiting you still? If you're wanting to be in like a smaller body and you're avoiding these foods, but you're noticing how much it decreases your joy and you ultimately really don't feel your best, is that really achieving the end goal of what you want from that, which is maybe more confidence, more enjoyment, more happiness in life? I could use a lot of examples like this, but I think that my main point in asking that final question is what I always encourage is coming back to the core reason as to why you're doing something, why you're asking yourself something, why you're pondering something, and then evaluating if you are actually supporting that through your choices and what you end up doing. Thank you so much for joining me for this episode today. I really hope that you enjoyed this and that you feel like you gained something from it. If you did, I would love to have you leave a rating or review or just let me know via DMs what you thought. You really support me and the show when you leave any type of feedback. And if you have an episode idea that you want to see, just know that there's always a link in the description to be able to share that. And if you're watching on YouTube, give this a thumbs up. That would be amazing. Leave a comment, anything of that sort. I feel like this has been a little bit of an awkward outro. So I feel like I need to just close it out, because if we keep it going, who knows what's going to come out of my mouth. But thank you for being here. I appreciate you so much, and I will see you very soon. Bye.